Hello and welcome to Motorsport Now. I hope you're looking forward to listening to this podcast because really it's so interesting, it's really in depth and tells you a lot about F1 that you don't necessarily know. And today's interview is with Paul Moynihan, and he was so lovely to chat to and obviously a really intelligent guy. Please get in touch once you've listened and just share with your friends and review and subscribe and get in touch on my Instagram, Jade Paveley Motorsport, or Facebook, Jade Paveley Motorsport. Without any further ado, here is Paul Moynihan, Chief Engineer at Aston Martin Red Bull Racing.
My name is Paul Moynihan. I work for Red Bull Racing Formula One team. My job title is Chief Engineer Car Engineering, which is quite difficult to define, but in essence, I get bits that no one else wants to deal with, or just before it all goes badly wrong, you try to stop it. That's probably a reasonable summary.
That sounds really inspiring to anyone who wants to get into that position. So
it's never a dull day, I promise you.
I can imagine, it's proper full on. So why did you choose engineering? What was your inspiration to go down that route?
That's probably... I was going to say you kind of... It's a pathway you set from young, but for me it was true. I was always interested in cars, always wanted to mess about with that sort of thing, liked making things, liked that aspect of it as opposed to the more mathematical, perhaps, pursuits of science. So it was more of applied than theoretical research and experimental research. So it was never... I suppose when it came to it, it was never really in doubt for me what I was going to do. It was never a question I'd had to pose to myself. It was something that always interested me, something that engaged me quite early on and held my interest and has done so. So why engineering is actually quite a difficult question to answer. It's more a case of how did I... I never really had a choice, I suppose. Never a choice that troubled me or worried me, should we say.
Did your family before you or anyone else you knew do engineering as well that kind of made you think, oh, actually, I quite like that?
Nothing family-wise, no. That's more medicine than it was engineering. Met a few people, yeah, some interesting people along the way. There was one chap from Cosra Electronics who was he was quite a car enthusiast. Lucky enough, he opened my eyes to a little bit of what could be done, and then a few other people on the way, you know, just sort of say that's actually quite good fun. This is fun, and yeah, there was never anything to put me off. I suppose it was always it can be a challenging, demanding, rewarding, fun way to work. So yeah, that's probably the best answer I can offer you. It's somewhat incomplete, but there you are.
No, it is kind of seemed the right thing to do for you, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That'd be a good summary.
Did you have like a first car that needed a lot of like tinkering with? Did you ever play around with your own cars at home?
Yeah, because as a student, there's no money to sort of take it to the dealer to get it fixed. So yes, you're kind of dropped in at the deep end to sort yourself out in that respect. So yeah, tinker with a bit of that. A friend of mine bought himself a cart, so we'd take that around and use that a bit. And so yes, there was always an element of doing that sort of thing. And a neighbour would come over and help me because he was a mechanic in the RAF in World War II. So he used to work on Hurricanes. So he was fascinating when you come over and you talk to him a little bit. And he would always come over and he always had a tool for this, he always had a method of doing that. So that's a lot from him, actually. He was ever so nice. He was a charming chap. And, you know, I needed to borrow his hoist in his garage, push the car over the road, hoist the car, take the engine out, all this rubbish. It was just very lucky. Is probably a good summary.
Yeah, and they're very much a get on and do it kind of attitude, aren't they, that kind of generation? So that's pretty good.
Very much so, yes. Nothing was too much grief, trouble or difficulty.
I guess that must have been quite an inspiration, really, indirectly, I suppose.
Yeah.
With obviously you've had quite a long career, not to point out too long, but it was quite a long career you've had. What have been your highlights for you, kind of your kind of peaks where you thought, you know, I'm really pleased I've done this and this has really come together for me?
Okay, first highlight, I suppose, is walking into McLaren day one, 5th of November 1990, and I thought, flipping hell, I've really got this far. Didn't know if it'd go beyond the end of the day, but that was properly inspirational, because you think, you know, so few people got into that level of motorsport, and not necessarily by any academic reason or anything like that. I have to admit, there's probably a huge amount of luck that helped me get there, like it or not, and good or bad. But yeah, walking in there was a very proud moment. Fabulous 10 years there. Lots of good highlights, lots of things like that, lots of very happy memories from McLaren. It was a really good place to learn and grow. And it could probably cope with me as a graduate and all the inevitable mistakes you make. And some of the lessons were a tad harsh. You learned some new language and faced down a few tyrants, should we say, from manufacturing, who thought I couldn't draw a pair of curtains, let alone a part to be made. But yeah, very happy memories from there, and 10 years in. Won a world championship. Still talk to Coulthard, who I worked with a lot at McLaren. What a fabulous chap. What a fabulous driver as well. He never blamed anybody but himself. Whatever had gone wrong, was always grateful for whatever efforts you've made, good, bad, whatever. He was fabulous, and sort of overlapped with the end of Ayrton's time at McLaren, which was a bit special. So we'll look back on that and think what a privilege that was. That was, first seat fit ever with a driver was with him. He was on his own in Carbill. I walked in, we had a chat, and then Ron et al. Came in, and I was kicked aside like tumbleweed, but he always said hello after that. So looking back, that's a proper highlight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Every year was enjoyable. Then to Renault. Highlights of working there. Working with Flavio, that was quite entertaining. Never really understood a word he said. But if I got three idiots a weekend, I just figured I was all right by the end of it. It's a little intimidating initially. Worked with Jensen, really good. Great bunch of engineers at Benetton there, really good fun. A little different in its culture from McLaren. A bit more fun, a bit more open in some ways. Not necessarily to their detriment. So it was just nice to see something else and see blue rather than necessarily the grey one. And 2 years with Jensen, and Mr. Alonso appeared. That was quite entertaining. Still good friends with him, and had a lot of good times with him. That was really good fun. Won his first race, got a first podium, second race. And still see him every now and again, catch up with him, whatever. I've had a karting lesson from him. He disappeared in three corners, so that was quite humiliating. He thought that was brilliantly funny. Out of it, you know, I think motorsport demands a lot of you, but it pays you back in ways that nothing else really can, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
You meet characters like that, and you just occasionally get the chance to do something really quite special. And then really on to here, and it was a rocky road to begin with, but 2010, 11, 12, 13, we were untouchable, and we survived all sorts of challenges and fun down to the last race, 2010, down to the last race, 2012. And they were perhaps the most rewarding, because week in, week out, you were absolutely flat out. But out of it came some race wins, some disappointments. We're always learning on the way, never standing still, always accepting. Things have gone well, things have gone less well. But as a team, we always had each other's backs. You know, we never disseminated into blaming one or anything like that. And if we lost a race, we'd go on and win the next one. And it's quite amusing. As we got near the culmination of the 2010 championship, we didn't really think about could we actually win it, because we almost didn't dare think about it. And when we got the Constructors' Championship in Brazil, it was a realization of, gosh, we've actually done this, folks. And then it sort of hit you as to what we'd actually achieved as a relatively small company, what everybody here had done, whether you were here in Brazil or here, didn't matter. That was really quite special. And a week later, we just about got over your hangover, and we're in Abu Dhabi to try and sort out the diver's title, which by luck, skill, good fortune, whatever you want to call it, combinations thereof, rewarded us with a driver's title as well. So there's a lot of highlights, aren't there? So I'm very privileged, very lucky.
Amazing career so far. So you must have obviously picked up a lot of hints and tips on the way, meeting various different people. Is there any advice that you think is really valuable that you've learned that you think would be important to pass on to the next generations coming through?
Never give up if you get rebuffed, because it is not easy to get into motorsport, and it can be quite harsh in its treatment of people at times. Never give up and always keep an open mind. You'll always learn something. When you think you've got perfect knowledge, something bites you to prove that you do not. And never assume your perfect knowledge and never give up. Probably the best two pieces of advice I could offer anybody.
You've worked with a number of different drivers, and I guess they've all got their own quirks on how they give feedback. Do you feel there's quite a language that you have to try and learn, or do you try and say, right, this is how I want to work, and they've got to try and give the feedback in this order? Or is there any particular quirks that stood out for you that have been...
I think that comes down to... I think there'll be a reasonably sort of common order amongst driver-engineer relationships. But I think you have to... I don't think you have to. The way I looked at it was you try to recognize each driver's strengths and weaknesses and always try to calm them down. Never get into an argument with them. Let them always be right, even when they're wrong, I suppose. Looking back is probably how it panned out. With Coulthard, his feedback was quite lengthy. And he'd pick up on small things whilst we circulated around the bigger problem, and then we'd converge on the bigger problem and then try to start dealing with it. So you just had to let David talk his way around to realising what he really wanted. And then it was our job to try and engineer how to give it to him and explain to him what we were trying to do and why. And yeah, his character strength was that his trust was utter and complete. And he never lost faith, and he was always open-minded, always very generous in his praise and very limited in his criticism. So he was a very, very nice person to have as your sort of first sort of driver to work with, shall we say. Mika, on the other hand, if I ever worked with him or listened to his channel, it was short sentences or single words, and that was it. And he would just come in, you'd get one word, maybe two words, understeer grounding or no grounding under steer or bit over steer, and that was it. It just went off. That was him done. You fix the problems and I'll drive the car type thing. It's just different styles. And I suppose like it wasn't English wasn't his first language. But goodness me, he was pretty quick on his day, wasn't he? So that was horses for courses. So Jensen was a bit more direct than Coulthard had been. Very funny on the radio when he wanted to be, great sense of humour. You never lose sort of faith or trust with him, and you were okay. If you spoke to him as a human being and you had your strengths, your weaknesses and whatever, you knew that, you were open with him and honest. He seemed very receptive to that, and that seemed to work with him. Fernando was quite a different case. He was at that stage, and probably still is, I haven't worked with him for a few years now, ruthless. Didn't want to leave any stone unturned, didn't want that we ignored something. Actually quite shy, believe it or not. He was all right in a small group. He put him in front of some engineers if he came to the factory and had a bit of a debrief, and he was really, really quite quiet. Jarno would do the majority of the talking. And Fernando would have one or two things to say. And he would occasionally drop a little golden nugget of information. And you might say, why didn't you say that before? And he said, well, I did, but you weren't listening. So it was never his fault, which was his coping mechanism, if you like. But I got to know him reasonably quickly, and we established, a decent trust. He might say I was a complete idiot and it was all him, but that's fine. Yeah, you just had to... he would decide which problems I could help with and which ones he would deal with, and that would be the contents of his debrief. Oh, you fix that and that, and I'll do everything else, was not an untypical comment. I don't think he distrusted it, but he knew he could fix some of it and he needed help with other bits. But his self-confidence, age 20 and 21, was just unbelievable. It really sort of, you know, took you aback a bit. And his bravery, his commitment and everything stood out. He was not one to mix his words. So if something went wrong, he wasn't sort of prepared to swallow his pride. Yeah, you got the tongue lashing. But I stood up to him one time. He'd moaned about Hockenheim, actually, 2003. Jarno beat us to a podium. I think we were fourth. Had blistered our tyres, and he was in a foul mood after the race. And the debrief was quite short. Hungary might only have been a week later, I think. I turned up there and sat down with him and said, look, this is what went wrong in Germany. It started on the Friday, and the problems manifested themselves on Sunday, and we didn't do the best job we could. Silence the other side. I said, look, you can have someone else run your car if you want, but it's not going to change what happened in Germany. We understand one another. This is how we deal with problems, and we move on. And that seemed to get over all of the difficulties at that point. And it seemed to be a sort of, I suppose I'd think of it as a watershed moment. He'd probably just say that I'd realised that I'd made a mistake. But things went wrong through Friday in Hungary. Wasn't brilliant on Saturday morning. By Saturday lunchtime, we were sitting on pole. So his speed and talent and determination really stood out. He was, I still talk to him, and it's still a bit of fun. Everything's still my fault. Nothing's ever his fault. So, yeah.
There is that big...
Sorry, go on.
Sorry, no, I was just going to say there's obviously that big book of driver excuses. So I think he's allowed to have a few of those pages.
It's generally blame me. But that's part of your fun. You've kind of got to unburden all their problems. So the next time they go out, they think it's going to be all right. And I always try to keep very calm with them, because they're the ones with the heart rate that's elevated. They're the ones with the adrenaline flying around. And I don't really need to add to it. And the other astonishing thing about Fernando is how calm he was and on the radio, unless he was shouting at me.
That happened then?
Oh, yeah. I got a few abusive phone calls from him, as it were, on the radio. We can be setting pink sectors, pink lap times, and he's talking about the state of the tyres like we're in a practice session. That was quite impressive. I didn't come across other drivers, I don't think, that had that, I won't say ability, but that presence of mind, shall we say, at the time in a race when you're being competitive. So it was quite impressive in that way. So they all have their traits. They all have a bit of fun. Pleasure to work with all of them. I'm very lucky at this kind of level. You do get the crop of the, or the cream of the crop, don't you? And highlights of the career working with some of the very best you'll ever meet and work with. Thanks to their patience and putting up with me.
During COVID, drivers have been able to kind of keep on their game by using like sims and obviously keeping up their fitness. I don't know if you kind of were able to stop at all, had to stop at all during lockdown, but how do you try and keep on your game? Do you read a lot? Do you research a lot?
By FIA regulation, we can't engage in team activities, so it's not as if we could work normally. I still have work to do with the FIA, which kept you thinking, going, and so on and so forth. I dare say it's true of everybody in this sport. In the unprecedented sort of 8-9 weeks we were stopped, you never stop thinking, you never stop pondering, you never stop considering. And whilst you didn't necessarily have access to your suite of tools and the brilliant minds that exist in this place to correct you or advise you or whatever, then you can still come back with ideas, thoughts, what we might look at, a few different ways to do things, should we review things, you know, what goes well, what goes badly. So I suppose staying on, as you like to put it, staying on top of your game in the shutdown, for me, I didn't find it particularly difficult because it gave you a rest you'd never had, which was probably good in the first place. And it's not something we can really switch off from. Well, I wouldn't anyway. So you're constantly pondering on that. Whatever you've been involved with recently or you've been involved with before, you might think about again. And the different environment, the different circumstance can often cause you to review choices, decisions, whatever. Did we do that right or wrongly or whatever? Did we do the best job there? And I guess we'll find out in what, 2 weeks when we go to Austria whether we are on top of our game or not, or whether others are a better one. It's a public exam, isn't it? Every couple of weeks or every week now, we have a public exam in front of most of a large audience. It's funny, isn't it? We can be a tenth of a second slower than one of our competitors, and we're nowhere. But in a 4 or 5 kilometre lap, a tenth of a second is a hundredth of a corner or something, isn't it? So it's quite fine measures of skills. And if we're a bit quicker than everybody else, we're great. And then it's the challenge of staying there, isn't it? So I think your question I can answer, but the real test is Austria, 5th of July, isn't it?
Yeah, very exciting. Are you looking forward to getting back?
Yeah, I think we kind of need to get going now, don't we? This sort of lull is it's nice in some ways, but it's not the reason we're all here. It's not the reason we've got this lovely factory and all these clever people and skilled people in buildings. We can make cars that are nice to look at. Some may disagree they're nice to look at. Some may find the Red Bull blue abhorrent, but I don't really care. That's their problem. We make them to go fast and race, don't we? And we've got a very good driver lineup. Max is obviously quite something very special, and we're very privileged to have him. Alex stepped in a very difficult situation last year. What a charming young man as well. He really is quite funny. Self-deprecating character, which is tight at times, but he's got a strong determination to him. And I really hope he blossoms into the car this year and not cements his place in the team, because he's already done that, but engenders himself as a worthy adversary to his teammate, who is already established as one of the very best you'll ever find. So maybe he can beat him. Who knows? It could be an interesting year, but I think we've got a hell of a chance going in this year. And at the moment, yeah, we're all level in the championship. 16 races apparently on the calendar. Let's go and see if we can pull a way out of it and get a championship. Who knows? Make a good effort to do it, though, won't we?
You certainly will. No, I think everyone's can't wait to see some motorsport. I think everyone's just kind of twitching now. I think we've kind of had that break, as you said, you don't ever get. Now you can get back into it. Just a last question. You said, obviously, it's very intense, Formula One. Emotionally, it's very charged. Obviously, so much money involved. And I guess there may be days, although you've got a fantastic way of looking at it, where maybe things have been pretty intense and you just need to kind of switch off. How do you do that? Is it spending time with your family, or do you have any other kind of hobbies?
Gosh. Going for a dog walk, I find very therapeutic. I see it'll make you chuckle. When it's all going wrong at the track, if it's between sessions, I'll go for a walk around the paddock. That 2 or 3 minutes clears your head and you come back and all of a sudden the world's a rosier place. So that's actually served me very well. After a certain spaniard threw a chair at you after one practice session. Well, it was actually a qualifying session. I had to go for a walk around the paddock before telling you he was a something. I really shouldn't have done that. But he didn't apologize to me, so yeah, it was quite fun. So that as a trick at the track, I find very useful. Just 2 or 3 minutes just for a walk up and down the paddock and then go back in, and it's better. But yeah, dog walk. I sometimes play a bit of tennis, used to do a bit of horse skiing. I haven't done that for a long time. That was a very good stress relief, but it left you physically depleted and unable to move your arms, I found. I bought myself a cart now as well. That my son is so much faster than me, I'm verging on banning him from it, because that's not very therapeutic. That just gives him ammunition to take the mickey out of me. Right? So it's different. Go home and there's dogs and horses at home, so it pulls you out of what was your moment of despair, and just changes your outlook and your environment, and that seems to work for me. So very lucky, I suppose.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for answering all the questions so thoroughly and very honestly. And I'm really excited for everything to get going again.
As am I, so let's see how we get on, mate. You'll have to Yeah, let's see how buoyant we all are after a couple of Austria races. So we won't talk to anybody. It clearly hasn't gone stunning well, but let's see if we can rock the previously established order, shall we?
What a great way to finish a podcast by saying, let's rock the previously established order. That's pretty cool. And I bet they all can't wait to get started again in Aston Martin Red Bull Racing. But that was a great interview from Paul. So thank you so much for your time, Paul, if you're listening. Thank you. Please review, comment, subscribe, get in touch on my Instagram, Jay Paveley Motorsport, on my Facebook. And it'll be great to hear from what you have to say. Thank you so much for my sponsors, the Forest Experience Rally School and Group B Motorsport, based in Llandudno. They do rally car preparation and car storage, amongst many other things. But I look forward to hearing from you. Stay safe and speak to you soon.